You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're in the throes of election season as presidential candidates are gearing up for debates, campaign stops, and speeches. But our next guest says there are key voices missing from these campaign stops and policy discussions, those of veterans.
Only one of the current presidential candidates, Republican or Democrat, has military experience. That's Lindsey Graham. He's not in the top 10 Republican candidates. In a recent piece, Jeremy Suri writes that we don't need to have someone necessarily with firsthand military experience in the White House, but our public discussions about national policy would benefit from a veteran's perspective.
We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Do you think it's important to include veterans in policy discussions? What unique perspective do you think veterans bring to the table, and what do you think is a good way to make sure veterans are heard on key issues? Call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Jeremy Suri joins us now to talk about why it's important to include veterans in foreign and domestic policy discussions. He's the Mack Brown Distinguished Chair for Leadership and Global Affairs at the University of Texas, Austin. Jeremy, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for having me on.
Well, did it used to be more the norm that we had people with military experience as presidents?
Absolutely. I mean, the norm in American history has been that men who have been all of our presidents so far, that men who ascend to that position generally have some military experience, either as enlisted officers or as individuals, as in the World War II generation, who were drafted into service.
But you're not making the case here that necessarily the president, him or herself, needs to have that military experience.
No. And we have had some distinguished presidents who were not veterans, Thomas Jefferson and John Adams as two examples of that, Woodrow Wilson as another. So my argument is not that you must be a veteran in order to be president of the United States, but I do think veterans' voices have always been important in the upper levels of our government, and they're less so today, and I think that's part of the explanation for our hyper-partisanship and ideological extremism at times. Veterans tend to, because of their military experience, among other things, to be pragmatic. They tend to want to get things done, and they tend to see the limitations of ideologies that we can sometimes take too far in our public rhetoric.
Well, let's get into that basic idea that veterans' voices have been less important at the top. Why and how?
Well, I think what's happened in our society since the Vietnam War is we've gone to an all-volunteer military, and we've gone to a separation between those who enter into politics and enter into business and even academic leadership and those who serve in the military. And in spite of all the wars we've fought since the Vietnam War, our wars have been small, and they've involved relatively few soldiers. And so that has meant that the majority of the individuals in our society who get advanced degrees and go on to lead organizations and run for office, the vast majority don't have military experience. Just look at Congress. Very few members of Congress have military experience, and very few of them have close advisors who have any military experience.
Well, let's talk about how to fix that, how either to get more veterans to run for office, maybe not president, but Congress or some other level like that, or at least to make sure they have people on their team with that experience.
Well, I think there's three things that we need to do. First, we need to spend more time really studying and understanding these issues. We talk a lot about whether we should go to war in Syria now in reaction to the events in Paris or not, but we don't spend a lot of time actually talking about what happened when we went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Those who have been there know the horrors of what happened, and we don't spend enough time talking about that. Our candidates seem to be very glib about the way they discuss these issues, so we need to require that the voices of those who served are at least part of our understanding of what we've done as we think about going forward. So that would be point number one. Point number two, I do think our politics have become less diverse. Fewer people are represented. It's more money than it is public service that's driving our politics, and we need people who have more public service experience running for office and advising those in office. We should demand that as a citizenry. And then the third point I'd make is we need to break down the divisions within our society between those who serve and those who don't serve. There is too much of a division. Cities like Madison and Austin are emblematic. Within those cities, you have very few people who have served in the military, many people who have Dante University, you go far out of those cities and you have the opposite phenomenon. So I think we need to break down these divisions more. All of that's hard to do, but I think it has to be done.
Talking to Jeremy Suri from the University of Texas, Austin, he says veterans' voices are not playing enough of a role in our policy discussions, foreign and domestic. You just brought up a lot there, Jeremy. Excuse me. I want to key in on that second point, though, of getting veterans' voices into the conversation, and that could apply to a lot of other groups of people, too, who don't have voices in politics. How do you do that? How do you get them talking to politicians to get politicians listening to them?
Well, I think the first thing we have to do is we have to take more action to limit the influence of money in politics. What has happened is, especially since the Citizens United decision, the big money held by very few people around the country has created a sucking sound to pull everything else out. Politicians spend an inordinate amount of time going after a few big donors and very little time talking to people with various other experiences and various other perspectives that they can share, even though they don't have a lot of money. And so that's an important part of it. And we also need to change our primary system, which is key to money and key to a few extremely active ideological individuals and groups, and not a mainstream population, which would include many veterans and would include many people from various other groups. Our politics have narrowed because our political constituencies have narrowed, and we need to change that.
You mentioned, as far as specific policy items, the decision of whether to go to war or not, and that seems like a pretty obvious connection to veterans. In that piece we referenced, though, you also mention domestic policy, that veterans have played a big role in a lot of important government decisions over the decades. Expand on that a little.
Yeah, so I'm one of many scholars to make this point, Rob. Since the 19th century, the development of our domestic programs has very much been the work of veterans, and very much the work of policymakers seeking to help returning veterans, help citizens who have served their country. So the largest social welfare program in the United States in the 19th century is the pension system. The federal government, its biggest program of all in the late 19th century, is providing pensions to Civil War veterans from the Union Army. And then after World War II, of course, one of the most significant, expansive, and enlightened pieces of social legislation the United States has ever passed is the GI Bill, the Servicemen's Readjustment Act, which actually provides the basis for a college education and home ownership for millions of Americans, including minority groups who have served in war. And those pieces of legislation transformed our country. One could take it even further. Veterans have been the largest recipients in many cases of social welfare programs in the United States. They have helped to build the system we live in now, and many veterans receive federal health insurance now through the through their benefits as veterans. So as we think about our country and as it's developed and as it's built programs to serve those in need, veterans have been an important voice for that. And I think the absence of a discussion of social welfare programs today reflects the absence of veterans' voices. We have ideological extremists, and we have people who have not served the public actually arguing to cut programs that serve and help those who have served the public.
The two examples you gave, though, the Civil War, World War II, I mean, these are things that there were huge wars. A lot of the American population, males in particular, participated in them. There was this huge common shared trauma, shared experience. Can that voice be recreated without a huge horrific war to make that happen again?
Well, so here, that's the big question, Rob. It's the question I think a lot of historians are struggling to understand. I hope we can develop that sympathy and that understanding and that sense of a common mission without having to fight a big war. But maybe it's not possible. Maybe that's part of the explanation. It is a puzzle, however, that we've been at war for more than 10 years in the Middle East, with many Americans serving, and yet it hasn't developed. It hasn't increased our awareness of these issues. In fact, these issues seem invisible to us. We do a horrible job of taking care of people who come back traumatized from these wars, and we don't even talk about it. And I think that reflects ignorance and perhaps a willful disregard by people who have interests in disregarding these issues.
We're talking to public affairs professor Jeremy Suri now about his view that we need more veteran voices in foreign and domestic policy discussions.
And what do you think about this? What role do you think veterans should play when it comes to national policy? How important is it to you that we have veteran advising our political leaders or that our political leaders have served in the military themselves? You can call now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation now with Jeremy Suri from the University of Texas, Austin, about the importance of including veterans' voices in national policy discussions.
You can join the discussion at 800-642-1234. What do you think veterans bring to conversations about foreign and domestic policy? Do you think it's important to have a veteran's perspective in the White House or as an advisor to the president? What role do you think veterans should play in national policy discussions? Call 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers with Mark in Richland Center. Mark, hi.
Hi. At the end of World War I, General Smedley Butler comes out with a treatise called War is a Racket. He had been and was the highest-ranking military officer in the Marine Corps at the time. And his treatise was that war is a profit-making thing driven by corporations. And so when you talk about the retired military having a voice in present-day policy, we need the military that are not beating the war drums to get just as much voice, but they don't get hardly any voice in the media today, and that's a problem.
Mark, thanks a lot for that call. And Jeremy, there could be voices from the military, veterans, saying opposite things in favor of a particular war, opposed to a particular war or war in general. We wouldn't get just one voice from veterans.
I think that's correct. I think we'd have a fuller discussion than we have today, a much fuller discussion. But I also want to agree strongly with Mark that many, many veterans, it's not a majority, it might not even be a plurality, but many veterans, especially those who have been in combat, are very cautious about going to war again. There is a phenomenon of those who have not seen war, not really fully appreciating how horrible it is, but also how unpredictable it is. And anyone who's really been in war thinks twice about going to war again. It doesn't mean they would oppose war in all cases. And I think the caution that a Dwight Eisenhower brought to later policymaking from his war experience, or Colin Powell, that caution is sometimes missing today because war seems like a video game to those who haven't really experienced it. And that's why I think veterans' voices are important for a richer discussion.
Thanks a lot for that call. We'll go next to Gary in Green Lake. Gary, hi.
Hi. Yep. I'm glad this discussion came up because I'm a veteran and I was drafted for Vietnam. A lesson from that. But if these politicians go to war, bring back, and everybody gets a crack at it.
You're breaking up there a little, Gary. I think he said bring back the draft, make sure everybody gets in it or at least has the possibility of getting in it. And we've heard that argument from some in Congress even over the years, Jeremy, that we need a draft for the public to realize the stake we have when we make the decision to go to war.
I think there's a lot to that. I think Congressman Charles Rangel and others have made this point. It upsets my wife whenever I say this because we have young children who would probably then have to serve in the military, and it might not be what they want to do. But it does seem to me that a conscription, a draft procedure, is valuable for two reasons. One, as Gary said, it means that if we go to war, those who are making that decision, their children, if they're above age, would have to serve. It's not just sending someone else to serve. And in all volunteer military, it's not the politicians usually who make the decisions who are also sending their children to serve. So that's one thing. Second, I think when you send people who are truly representative of your population from all groups, you have a war that by necessity has to draw on the support of more parts of society. It's not a war being fought by a few for a small set of interests. And so you have a truly representative and therefore more popular backing for the war you're fighting in that case. So I think a draft would serve many purposes. The argument against that, of course, is that a volunteer professional army fights better. They probably do, but I think there's a huge democratic cost, and we might want to emphasize the democratic side of the story more than we do now.
Yeah, one group that tends to oppose a draft is the military brass, the leadership, who wants that volunteer military, the professional military.
Right, and I understand where they're coming from. That makes a lot of sense, that professionals will fight better, they'll be better trained, and the military does an excellent job of training leaders and promoting them through. I see that, but I also see a value in having a military that's representative of society. That is, of course, what the Founding Fathers wanted, a representative military, not a professional military. A professional military is separated from society and separated from those who make the decisions of war and peace, and that has a real cost for us, Rob.
Talking to Jeremy Suri from the University of Texas Austin about veterans' voices and policy discussions. He says we need to hear more of them. Politicians, lawmakers need to hear them too. And Jeremy, you mentioned that insulation, and there's been a lot of critique in recent years that we've got in this country the sort of people who serve in the military. They might be from particular zip codes, ethnic, demographic, economic backgrounds, and then we've got everybody else, and there's not a lot of conversation between those two groups.
I think that's absolutely right, and it is represented in our presidential primaries now. It's extraordinary. We have so many candidates and so many business interests represented by them, and so many interests of other wealthy groups represented by our candidates. You can chart it. You can talk about who it is. And then you have candidates who are also appealing to certain groups of young people and mobilized groups of other kinds. But veterans are not in the discussion. We haven't had an election like this that I can find evidence of before. And that's striking of how mainstream society ignores veterans, just as veterans often ignore mainstream society. And that's not good for us, certainly not in the making of policy.
Chris wrote to us on Facebook. Chris says it's not a necessity for politicians to be veterans, but it is wise to listen to them when it comes to matters of war, and not just matters of war and foreign policy, Chris says, but in matters of care for our veterans and what's best for them. And that when we think veterans in politics these days, we might think of the ongoing issues at the Veterans Administration, the hospitals, yep, and other care facilities. Is that a place that we maybe should have been listening to veterans a long time ago?
I think so, and it comes back to the excellent question you raised before, Rob, about domestic programs in general. The VA, the Veterans Affairs Department, is only one of many elements of our government that is designed to help those who have served their country in many ways live a healthier, safer, more fulfilling life at home, and that is part of the role of government, and we've lost sight of that. We are so focused on trying to cut programs that we're not thinking about those who are being cut and hurt, and they very often are veterans. There are large problems in our society of mental health issues among veterans, poverty among veterans, just as there are among other groups, and that's not being addressed because those voices are not included, and I think we're a far lesser society for that.
I want to bring this up to the news of the day, the ISIS attacks on Paris. If you were talking to a politician, what would you tell him or her about what they need to learn from veterans when they're crafting a policy, a response to ISIS?
Great question. I would emphasize two things above all. There's a desire, a legitimate desire after an attack like this to react, to show that we're fighting back, and the French immediately started bombing in the region, as we've been doing. Anyone who's a veteran will say, think very carefully about the people you're sending into harm's way when you're reacting, even when you have legitimate reasons to react. It's not just about what you're reacting against, it's also about who you're sending there. And second, I think veterans would say, please make sure that whatever we're doing, we're not just acting the way we're acting in reaction to one particular event, but that we're making a larger argument about a purpose for our country and about a larger program in the region. We need to have a strategy for the Middle East before we have a way of just reacting to these events in Paris. Otherwise, the people we're sending there, they don't know really why they're fighting. They can't just be fighting against ISIS. They have to be fighting for something as well.
And Jeremy, as we wrap up, I think politician plus veterans group equals photo op a lot of the time. What would be, on a practical level, you know, a way for politicians to, have a round table or something with members of the veteran community that would give some kind of meaningful feedback?
I think it's important that anyone who's going to be making decisions about war and peace, about spending the American military anywhere, has spent time talking to those with extensive military experience, and not just those who have lots of stars on their shoulders, which means they've politically moved up through the bureaucracy, but also many of those who have served and really understand the magnitude of what they're doing, just as I think it's absolutely crucial that anyone who's running for office and going to be making the decisions the president makes have shown
that they are in touch with many different groups within society, including veterans, and the issues that they contend with. I would like to see those voices represented in our debates. I don't know why we don't spend more effort to try to get different groups time to question these candidates. Why is it always the same questioners with the same kinds of questions? I'd like to see the candidates respond to people representing these groups and the questions and issues they raise.
Jeremy, thanks as always for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Jeremy Suri from the University of Texas Austin. His piece on veterans and politics is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.